Karma Automotive, Forbes magazine's most anticipated luxury electric vehicle. Karma Automotive is a luxury EV brand designed and manufactured in California. Proud sponsor and official luxury vehicle of the Las Vegas Raiders. Charge the motion beyond EV. Karma Automotive. The Las Vegas Raiders have partnered with the global lifestyle app True Connect to give the gift of wellness. Transform your mind, body, and soul through thousands of hours of premium fitness content, guided meditations, progress tracking, and more. Visit tcfree.fit to redeem one free year of True Connect exclusively for Raider Nation.
The game is over, but we're just getting started. You're listening to The Fifth Quarter, presented by Twitch. On the Raiders Podcast Network.
Raiders lose in Chicago, a game many Raider fans had circled on the schedule, especially with a one-win Bears team as a victory. And after wins over the Packers on Monday night, a win over Bill Belichick and the Patriots last Sunday, riding the two-game winning streak back to 500 on the season, you looked at the Chicago Bears, you thought over 500 the Raiders will get to going in to the Monday night game against the Detroit Lions, but it wasn't meant to be today as the Raiders did not show up in all facets of the game, and the Bears win it by a final of 30-12. Raiders postgame is sponsored by Ticketmaster. Make more memories this season. Get tickets at the official marketplace of the Las Vegas Raiders. I am Tim Cates, joined by Jason Fitz here on the Raiders postgame show. Jason, dismal performance today by the Silver and Black. Missed field goal early. They went to Davante Adams early, but after that, it was just the wheels fell off.
This was an inexcusable effort. It was an inexcusable outcome. It was inexcusable to put that on the field for the process of an entire football game. And I do think it's important to stress that it's an entire football game, because this is not one of those games where, oh, it got out of hand at the end. No, this game from the outset felt like the Raiders did not show up. It felt like the Raiders were not at the same level of intensity. It felt like the Raiders had no answer whatsoever on what to do against, I don't know, running the football to the edges, which was obviously something that the Bears saw on tape. They knew they could expose, and they did. There were no adjustments. There was no intensity. There was nothing from the Raiders to take away from this game that felt good, and it just had me sitting there saying, man, every single year, it feels like there's one of these games, whether it was last year to the Colts against Jeff Saturday, my buddy, making his coaching debut, or it was last year, you know, against the Rams when all of a sudden Baker's been there for like 3 seconds and does this. This was that annual effort from the Raiders that leave fans wondering why we put ourselves through this every single year. It was inexcusable, and it doesn't define who this team is. But on this day, make no mistake about it, a bad football team in the Chicago Bears just knocked the snot out of the Raiders. And that is something that will sit in the craw of everybody for the rest of the season.
I mean, it started from the get-go, Jason. The Raiders' offense came out, marched downfield. They miss a field goal inside the red zone. Back comes the Chicago Bears, march downfield, get into the end zone, run it down their throat. In the second quarter, Marcus Peters was nonchalant on a play, on a fly sweep, in which he could have, you know, stopped it for a 3-4 yard game with an arm tackle. Instead, the old Ole, and he picks up a first down. It was just dismal watching this defense up front. The defensive line, Jason, couldn't get off their blocks. And the Chicago Bears, which are one of the worst offenses in the National Football League, 29th coming in, they give up 30 points a game, but offensively, they just can't do anything, and they did whatever they wanted against the Raiders today.
Yeah, their offensive line, by the way, got famous all over the internet about a week ago, right, for the chest bump where two players ended up bumping into each other rather than blocking a defender. And what we see today, they knew what was coming. Everything stayed in front of them. And I'm stunned to see, and Horowitz had this great nugget at the end of the game, that after the first drive, which was a three and out for the Bears, after that first drive, every drive until the end of the game, till junk time, was at least either 8 plays or 35 yards in every drive for the rest of the game. That tells you, and you know, as much as we want to make it sometimes, we're so offensive obsessed, and I understand why, you got to acknowledge the fact that no matter what was happening on the offensive side of the ball, the Bears were sustaining long drives. The Bears were making third and short look like child's play while they continued just run the ball at a clip of over 5.5 yards a carry. I mean, that's alarming when you can run the ball on a defense the way the Bears did today. And there's also not a ton of pressure coming at the young quarterback that's playing. And you're not really confusing him with anything you're doing. It's just lackluster in every way. And that's why it was a butt whooping.
Yeah, they didn't make any ideas of throwing the ball down the field. I mean, everything was 20 yards or shorter for the Chicago Bears offense today. And they just kind of paper cut him to death over four quarters today. And the Bears get the win 30-12 over the Raiders. 855-4JUST-WIN is the phone number. Raider fans, you know it. 855-4JUST-WIN. 855-458-7894. Tim Cates, Jason Fitz. I want to hear from you, Raider fans. We're also going to hear from Josh McDaniels coming up. Any Raider postgame as well. Reaction we'll get to from Soldier Field. Tim Cates, Jason Fitz. Raiders postgame show continues as the Raiders lose in Chicago 30-12. Missed the opening field goal on the opening drive that would have given him a 3-0 lead on what was a nice drive by Brian Hoyer and the Raiders to get inside the 25-yard line, but they come up with no points. Back came the Chicago Bears, and they dominated all three facets of this game with a rookie quarterback. No Justin Fields, Jason. That's amazing. They bring in a rookie quarterback making his first start, an offensive line that's banged up, a backfield that's absolutely banged up. Deontay Foreman comes in, 16 carries, 89 yards, 2 touchdowns, and just ran it down their throat.
Yeah, and there's just a part of me that expected with a rookie undrafted free agent quarterback that there would be something thrown at him that felt like the kitchen sink early. Force him into a mistake, shake his confidence, see what you can do. None of that happened. I think the Raiders came in trusting that their front four against a bad offensive line would be able to generate a ton of pressure. Flat out, it just couldn't. And because it couldn't, then at some point just felt like they weren't willing to send the farm and expose the secondary against the only thing the Bears have, which is a wide receiver in DJ Moore that can beat you. So it felt like the entire game plan from the outset just wasn't right for aggressiveness. And I know that has a lot of people frustrated. I hear everybody. I believe me, I hear what everybody has to say about this. I don't think that, you know, suddenly you're going to make this team better by today coming in and making a drastic change of head coach. That rarely works, right? Like, I know we've all watched and everybody watched. I watched as a fan, Rich Bisaccia come in and really become sort of the pulse of a locker room. I know that's stuck in everybody's mind. That is the exception, not the rule. I think at some point, McDaniels, it's fair to question some of the aggressiveness decisions. It's fair to question the late fourth down decision of fourth and goal to kick a field goal instead of go for a touchdown. I think that's all very fair. I just don't know as much as anyone thinks that will be a change that helps right now.
You know, Jason, I'm not going to put all the blame on Josh McDaniels. I don't think it's fair. I mean, obviously this team wasn't ready to play today on both sides of the football, but there were plays and where guys were in there in the right situation, the right call was made. Brian Hoyer just missed throws today. He was not pinpoint with his throws behind guys, over guys. He had Davante Adams wide open in the end zone when they were knocking on the door trying to score in the fourth quarter on third and goal, and he missed throws, and Davante Adams made a nice effort to twist, turn around, and try looking over his head to make the catch, and it goes off his fingertips. You know, they can't run the ball. That's clear. So when you became a passing team like they have been, and you got an inaccurate quarterback in Brian Hoyer today, you're not going to get the ball moving downfield very often.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said about accountability to execution. I'll also add to that a play you referenced earlier with Marcus Peters had the opportunity to make a big tackle. There was also a third and two that four different people missed the clear tackle on. Like, at some point, I know we talk about coaches all the time, but at some point, what's really helped this defense and the way this defense has been played, and this is the way the defense is being played across the NFL right now, everybody's playing more of a shell defense, keep it in front of them, tackle the person as soon as they make it, try and limit yards after the catch, bend, don't break. These are all things that are leading to a record number of field goal attempts. Like, this is a new trend across the NFL. The Raiders have played this defense a lot this year. This is the first time in several weeks where we can say, hey, they just couldn't make those plays. They didn't make those plays. I think at some point we have to look at it, not only look at the coaches. I know that's an easy solution for everybody, but you got to look at the players too and say, hey, when you got that many people missing that many tackles, there's nothing Graham or McDaniels or anybody else can do about that.
Yeah, I mean, the Raiders defense for the first 6 weeks has been carrying them, and they're not even scoring 20 points a game except the 21 points they put up against the New England Patriots last week, and yet they're still winning football games.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what Coach has to say about it. There's not much that anybody can say that I think will make fans feel, right? Like, is there any, there's nothing thing for everybody that's on hold. We'll take the calls in just a second, Tim. Like, is there anything anybody's going to hear today that'll be like, oh, yeah, I totally get it. I understand. Like, no, the hurt right now is too real for fans.
Yeah, I mean, I even look at the fourth quarter and trying to take away some positives for maybe Aiden O'Connell in mop-up duty or something that popped out in the late fourth quarter when they were, you know, down and not going to win this football game. But, you know, nothing really comes to mind as, you know, a positive thing you can take away from this and build on moving forward. I mean, they got to completely go back to Las Vegas this week and just strip it down. And Josh McDaniels and this coaching staff have got to some way get these guys motivated on both sides of the football, because clearly today, Jason, these guys on defense, I mean, Marcus Peters' effort today was just unacceptable.
Well, and we'll find out a lot about what the locker room really thinks of everybody in this process, because if they come back fired up, then, hey, there's still something to this. There's still magic. If they come back checked out, there's a problem here. There's an interesting sort of cross-section here, because why are you snapping the ball late is a bigger question than, you know, when is the ball being snapped. And I'll go back to something Sunday Night Football told all of us a few weeks ago that I think is important. The three teams in the NFL that use the most pre-snap motion are Miami, Kansas City, San Francisco. What do all three of those teams have in common? They're all very imaginative offensively. They find a ton of great ways to use a ton of different weapons. The one thing that I will say, and I don't think that necessarily when you snap the ball is a big deal, but for whatever reason, Josh McDaniels and the Raiders offense feels like they can't just trust that motion of it, because what we all know at this point is the Raiders use six offensive linemen more than any team in the NFL, and they like to use six offensive linemen plus a fullback a bunch of times. So now you're talking about just trying to keep your quarterback upright. You're just trying to protect yourself, which means less people in the pattern to get open. Like, all of these little nuances, I think, are part of the complications of the offense. Now, the question is that because the coaching staff, it just feels like, hey, we're going to line up, do what we do, and make them stop it? Or is that because the coaching staff feels like if they try and get more clever in what they do offensively, then things can go awry? Tim, I don't think we can know the answer to that right now.
No, I don't think so either. If you're going to bring in an extra tight end, you're going to bring in a fullback, and you're going to make an effort to run the football, it's got to be better than 2.5 yards per carry against the Chicago Bears defense. It's just flat has to be. And at the same time, as you mentioned, if you're going to have extra protection out there and only have two guys going out and running routes, Brian Hoyer's got to be more accurate with the football today, because there were opportunities for guys to make plays after the catch, and he's throwing behind them. He's overthrowing guys. Davante Adams in the end zone, I mentioned, that's a glaring one in which he threw it and Davante Adams just couldn't make a play on it, twisting and turning and goes off his fingertips. Josh Jacobs makes a great catch and doesn't get 2 feet down in the end zone. I mean, it's the National Football League, Jason. You got to know once you get to the end zone, you got to toe tap to get into the end zone. Make sure you get both feet down.
Yeah, it's never any one thing. And this is something, every time I talk to Raider Nation Radio when I do my weekly call-ins with Clay and the guys in the morning, one thing that constantly gets asked is, what's the problem with this team? And my answer is always the same. If it were just one thing, that would be really easy to solve. Like, I know everybody wants to yell about, like, quarterback, for example. Cool. Let's yell about that all day, every day. That's fine. But that doesn't change the fact that the offensive line isn't playing well enough. That doesn't change the fact that there are inopportune drops that you just... Well, why that drop in that moment is terrible, right? And so there's little moments for bad football teams, little moments stack up, and that's where the Raiders have been for much of this season.
Was it false momentum, you think, the last two wins over the Packers and the Patriots? I mean, they didn't score a ton of points. The Raiders' defense came strong in the wins against both teams on Monday night and last week against the Patriots. A little false hope for this Raiders team, having won two in a row going into Chicago and thinking they'd win a third in a row?
I mean, here's the thing. The Bears are bad. And so I don't think it was false hope thinking you could go in and beat the Bears. In fact, I was talking to one of the Chicago radio stations this week, and they asked me about the Raiders, and my answer was very simple. If you look at the middle of the group, middle group of the league, the sort of, okay teams, the Raiders are kind of one of those. And that means if everything doesn't break right, they're going to look really bad. And everything breaks right, they'll look okay. And so you could look at, you know, poly positive out of this. Hey, 3-3 at the time, knowing that not everything's clicked together. Hey, maybe this will work out. But if you really go back and just ask yourself to insert some truth serum in your veins, to go back and watch a week one win over the Broncos. Like, the Broncos have turned out to be terrible. The Raiders needed every ounce of everything to win that game. The win over the Patriots, who I know surprised the Bills today, but still, the Patriots do not look like a very good football team, and it took every ounce of everything. I'm not sure the Packers are really any good, took every ounce of everything. So I think the Raiders are right in the same boat with a lot of these teams that are sitting around 500. They really aren't that great compared to the best of the best in the league, but but they're trying here trying to be competitive. It's not that they lost the game, though. Yeah. The thing that will continue to eat at me isn't that they lost the game. It's that they got dominated by the Bears in a way that Chicago hasn't dominated a team in probably 3 years. Like, that's the craziest part. They didn't just lose. They got whooped by a bad football team.
And a Chicago Bears team that had not won at home in 10 straight games going back to September of last year. They get that win today, 30-12 over the Raiders. Let's head back out to Soldier Field and let's get the post-game thoughts of Josh McDaniels.
Did a lot better job than we did in that. Run the ball, control the line of scrimmage, got control of the score, played better on third down, you name it, and it, that's what it was. So obviously we have a lot of work to do and a lot of things to improve. You know, just not, you know, not good enough to win in any phase, really.
Do you think there's a reason for what appeared to be non-preparedness?
Or say it again.
Just not ready to play?
No, I don't think it. I mean, we had a chance to go down there and take the lead and, you know, just, you know, we stopped them on a three and out and then go down there. And, you know, I think we had an opportunity for a field goal on the first drive, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, we just didn't convert that. But, you know, I don't think it wasn't we weren't ready to play. I thought our guys had energy and juice. And, you know, we're excited, obviously, for this opportunity. And we just, you know, like I said, we lost control of the line of scrimmage. And then we got kind of, you know, playing the game backwards, you know, and that's really not a formula that has suited us, you know, and we need to figure out how we can do that better.
Any thought about making a quarterback change at halftime?
I don't think it was, you know, everything was all the quarterback's fault. Certainly, I thought there was some missed opportunities that we had. But I thought he hung in there and kept playing, you know, and, you know, put us in position to try to go down 21-10 if it was, you know. So, you know, not really. You know what I mean? Not really.
Josh, you are 24 games in.
Yep.
And the process seems to be struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Do you look at changing the process? Do you look at adjusting it, scrapping it? What do you do?
Yeah, look at everything, Hondo. I mean, you know, again, I think we've had stretches where it's been fine, you know, and very competitive. But we need to find some consistency in all three phases. I think we have some of that in the kicking game. But I think we, you know, we've had stretches where we've played competitively on offense and defense, just not enough. And again, that's you're asking the question to the one who's responsible. So I have to figure out something. We have to figure out something as a staff, as a team, to try to be able to be more productive, you know, more disruptive, more productive on offense, score more points, obviously, you know. So it's just, you know, right now it isn't good enough, you know, and it needs to get better.
Ultimately, the determination to start Brian Hoyer over.
We've looked, I've seen him practice every day, you know what I mean? And I've watched him and I saw Aiden and, you know, in the LA game and had an opportunity to really understand what was going on there and saw Brian last week in the New England game. And, you know, so just made the decision to, you know, try to, you know, go with the veteran guy and try to go out there and play a solid game, you know? And so, I'm not going to second guess that.
I understand that, but is there ever any consideration just to kind of see what you have in aim and continue?
Yeah, but this isn't the preseason anymore. You know what I mean? We had an entire week of practice in L.A. You know, or most of the week. You know, we had an opportunity to practice them. You know, and there were some good things, and there was some other things that, you know, we needed to work on and fix, and obviously get better and improve. So. You know, that's such is life in that regard. You know, when your starter is not available, you know, you're trying to make what you think is the best decision for the team. Again, I don't put this all on one person now. Let's make sure we make that clear. There's a lot of people that can do a better job of what we did today, and that's what we're going to need to do.
There was a real concerted effort to get the ball to Devontae early, and then he wasn't much of a factor beyond that. What happened with him?
I mean, there's always – I think to put this all to bed, like, we always try to get the ball to, you know, our best guys, you know what I mean? And sometimes the defense, you know, plays things that take that opportunities away. Other times they don't, you know, and so we've always been looking to try to do that, and we'll continue to try to do that, you know. So just so happened there was a handful of things early in the game that we had opportunities to go ahead and get to them, and they played defenses and, you know, didn't double team them and all the rest of it, take them away, and we moved them around some. But, you know, give those two credit, the quarterback and Tay. I mean, they got off to a decent start, and then they started to do some things with the coverage. And again, we got to play the game more on early downs where it's first down, second and four, first down, second and four, instead of getting into third down, third and long, you know, as much as we did as the game wore on.
All right, Jason, I hear him saying they've got to fix things and get better, obviously, on both sides of the football, but not a lot of answers right now. And I think you don't going to have any answers if Jimmy Garoppolo and his back is a huge issue. I mean, your starting quarterback is not able to go. Your highly paid backup in Brian Hoyer today just struggled with his accuracy. The Raiders got a problem, and it starts at the quarterback position.
Yeah, the problem is it's the trickle down of all of this, right? Because when you can't throw the football, it also is going to make it difficult to run. There are several factors to why the Raiders aren't running well. And again, I'll defer to people that played the game at the highest level that I've talked to in the last week to try and get a better understanding of what's wrong with the running game. Part of it has been chronicled on social media as teams are defending the run differently against the Raiders because they don't believe the Raiders are going to try and push the ball over the top. Like, we all know that. Part of it is also that the offensive line is doing what appears to be a very poor job at times of communicating, passing their blocks from one person to the other. And part of it seems to be that there's a little bit of a sync issue between Josh Jacobs and the offensive line. So the question is, how do you fix, if there are three different things that are slowing down your ability to run the ball, how do you fix them quickly? Yeah. And then if you can't throw the ball, can you really fix any of that? So this is where the unfortunate thing is, at some point, the identity of who your team is the identity of who this team is. Like, this offense, it stinks this year. And I don't think there's anything that's suddenly going to fix the fact that this offense stinks. I really don't think any quarterback could come in on this roster and suddenly turn this into a 35-point offense. It feels like there are too many failings for them to fix it in the middle of the season.
If you replace the head coach, what is going to change with this Raiders team? I mean, what on the field product is going to change from what we saw today? The offense all of a sudden going to get better and score more than 20 points per game? Is the defense going to start getting more takeaways like they have been the last two games? Honestly, changing the head coach, what is it going to change on the on-field product for this Raiders team right now?
For this year, nothing.
Right.
You know, and then the other thing, just to remind everybody, is that change, which is what people crave, I get it, but like Dan Campbell right now is just absolutely seen as a golden god of coaching. He was 3-13-1 in his first year, and there were plenty of people that were saying, oh my God, Dan Campbell doesn't have it. Now, I'm not saying that to say that, okay, we excuse bad results. I'm saying that to remind anybody that you can go ahead and make the change, but again, I'll remind everybody, the same people making the decisions to hire Josh McDaniels would be the same people making the decision to hire whoever comes in next. You got to hope that you got it right. This is like quarterbacks. Yeah. Everybody wants a new quarterback, but hiring a coach is an absolute roll of the dice. So if you think that change is the answer, cool. I understand it. I hear everybody on it. I'm not sure everybody's wrong. I'm just saying this. If that's the avenue you take, then you're going to bring in a new coach who's going to bring in a new system, who's going to bring in their guys, which is going to lead to 2 to 3 years of trying to figure out how to build where you feel better because maybe it's headed in the right direction. Like, this cycle never ends at some point. So that's the hardest part. But I don't disagree with everybody that's frustrated. In a beautiful world, I would love to see a world where this coaching staff can get it to click with these players, because change doesn't always bring anything different.
I got my Raider buddy to just text me and said, what about Rich Bisaccia a few years ago? Change at head coach, obviously different circumstances, understand that. But he comes in, new voice, and this Raider team went on a playoff run, and he didn't get a shot to get the actual head coaching job, only on an interim basis. I don't think this is the situation. He's not going to bring a new head coach in and all of a sudden the play is going to flip. I mean, the message may flip, the culture may change a little bit because the message is different, but this is completely different.
So before the NFL draft in 2019 out in Vegas, I think it was, or whatever year it was in Vegas, a couple years ago, I did a feature for ESPN at the time. And that feature was me and Max Crosby getting tattoos. We went to, Hart and Huntington. We got tattoos and we spent 4 hours talking. And I'll never forget, over the course of that 4-hour interview, I asked Max, because that was right after that season with Bisaccia. I said, what changed? What happened? Now, yes, everybody in that building absolutely loved Rich Bisaccia. There's no doubt about it. They still do. Mm-hmm. Every single one of them absolutely loved him. But the thing that really blew my mind is Max said, man, after we got blown out, the leaders walked into that locker room and we looked to a man, to every person in there, and they said, we're going to decide what we are for the rest of the year. Are we going to be this, or are we going to be something different? And I say that because as much as we sit here and talk about the coaches, at some point it takes 53 guys on an active roster looking at each other in the eyes and saying, man, that's not going to define us. That team was so special because they went through so many things, galvanized them together, really made them a family. Bisaccia had the right heartbeat of the team, all of these things. I think it's really fair to talk about that, but I also think it's fair to look at the guys that were in that locker room, like Max, that stood in front of everybody and said, hey, who are we going to be? And that message was received the right way. It brought everybody together. I think that was a specific magic moment in time that brought a magical group together. Do I think that would have been golden if we continued that as a fan? Heck yeah, I would have loved every ounce of that. But all that to say that we don't know if there's another Rich Bisaccia in the room right now.
Right.
We don't know if that Bisaccia got the job, if then the 53 would galvanize the way they did that year. Like, yeah. I just think sometimes a locker room is special.
Well said. Well, by the way, what was the tattoo that you got?
So my right arm is everywhere I've ever lived in the moments I'm proudest of in my life. It's mm-hmm. a huge skyline. So I got the NFL draft logo because I always wanted to cover the draft for ESPN. So I was able to get the draft logo to commemorate that moment. Max, because he's tough, got kill or get killed above his knee. So, like, you know, different personalities. I got the NFL draft logo. He got kill or get killed.
At any point, do you think maybe I'll just get that as well, kill or be killed somewhere on my body?
Yeah, no, I didn't. But I did take comfort the couple of times that we were talking and he accidentally let like an F-bomb slip out because I was like, good, if Max is uncomfortable during this tattoo, then I feel better about me. You know, it's a.
Yeah.
But also, by the way, I will say this quickly. That 4 hours galvanized something too for me. Some guys have it. Max mm-hmm. has it. Like when you watch him play, that's one thing. But like when you see him, even the way he can, the way he carries himself and everything he does, I walked away from that day saying, this guy is going to be the face of the franchise for the next decade. And I still believe that.
I'm glad you brought that up because on that same play where Marcus Peters didn't make the tackle with the arm tackle, there was Max Crosby. Even though he got chipped by the tight end and was getting double teamed all day on that play, he's still flying back down the field, diving, trying to make a tackle. His motor is always going.
Thank you for listening to the Fifth Quarter presented by Twitch. Make sure to download the Raiders mobile app and we'll see you next week.